following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday. Today's Thursday. I lose track sometimes, especially in weeks like this. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com. And perhaps you're listening later on the Progressive Voices Network. We're on live. We're on their tape delay at 6 p.m. Eastern. And of course, the show is always available as a podcast. So however you listen, I thank you for doing so. Thank you for supporting the program. So I got to tell you, I went to see Bohemian Rhapsody this weekend. And I loved it, like everybody else. I guess there are a few factual errors in the story, but the movie itself was just, I mean, a couple of hours of great entertainment, which is, after all, what we need, especially when we're all so stressed out, when things are just crazy in our world. You need some downtime. You need some time to just unplug from the politics and the insanity of it all and enjoy some entertainment of whatever variety. So, you know how I try to start the show off with something humorous each day? Well, a listener sent this to me this morning, and I thought it was brilliant. So we'll start off. It's not Queen, and it's not Randy Rainbow, but it's close. Here we go.
I think it's real nice to have freedom of speech. Grateful for that right. No complaints about liberty. It's just sometimes exchanges online get me. I'm at my key.
I think we might need prayer or help
see a little twit who's ranting in all caps.
They're a douche, I will shortly unfollow.
But it's worth of fighting him with my QWERTY typing keys.
You're an a-hole, you stupido.
You're a keyboard warrior.
Command me, bro.
Bro.
Now there's a tool boy posting his hate speech.
He's just a tool boy with insecurities. Can't wait to block all his misogyny.
Comment war is dying down, have we let it go?
We will not know, cause now here come the trolls.
I've been trolled.
We will not,
cause now here come the trolls.
Thirsty trolls.
We will not,
cause now here come the trolls.
Super trolls.
Now here come the trolls.
Super trolls.
Now here come the
trolls. Now here come the
trolls. Trolls, 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 trolls.
Oh, I'll delete them, I'll delete them.
I'll delete them if they troll.
Mark Zuckerberg, make all of my friends out just like me. Like me.
Especially when it sounds just like me. I love my opinion.
Oh, that's just awesome. Yes. Oh my goodness. How awesome was that? Yeah. Applause, everybody. First of all, the energy in that was great. And the guy's voice was incredible. That's not an easy song to sing. The Opinion Rhapsody is what they call that. You can find it on YouTube by people named Dustin and Genevieve. I don't know anything more about them other than it's Justin and Dustin and Genevieve. I will post that video on my blog at NicoleSandler.com today after the show, along with today's podcast, so you can go back and listen to it or watch the video again. How awesome is that? I love creative people. You know that you already know that I'm sort of infatuated with Randy Rainbow. When I first saw a Randy Rainbow video, I tried to track him down. I found him on the internet, and I sent him a note and asked him to please come on the show. And he's like, "Oh, I'd so appreciate it. I'm really busy, but you know, keep in touch, right?" Well, now David tells me this morning Randy Rainbow is coming in concert. I kid you not. Hold on. If you Google Randy Rainbow tour, tour dates 2018, and he's going to be in Fort Lauderdale for two nights. I got to see if I can justify spending the money to go because, you know, again, it's entertainment, it's laughter, and it's healthy for the mind, the body, the psyche. So in this little tour jaunt he's doing, he's going to be somewhere in Los Angeles. Oh, I see. And what I'm looking at, the page I'm looking at doesn't tell you where. He's got a show tonight, Randy Rainbow, tonight in Los Angeles, tomorrow in Palm Springs. And Saturday in Palm Springs and Sunday in Palm Springs. Then he comes to Florida, Orlando, two nights in Fort Lauderdale, and then Munhall, Pennsylvania, Indianapolis, and Louisville. I'm warning you ahead of time because, again, I think, I don't know. I'm gonna try to somehow justify going to see Randy Rainbow. Anyway, see, anything to take my mind off of the craziness going on. And I should be somewhat happy because Democrats keep winning. Yes, they called another race for the Democrats today. Jared Golden wins in the nation's first federal race decided by ranked choice voting in Maine. By the way, Jared Golden was one of the Blue America endorsed candidates. Normally on Thursday, we would have Howie Klein tell us all about it, but Howie's out today. He took a little bit of a vacation after the election. We can't deny him that. But in his stead today, Digby will be here. Now, Digby works with Howie Klein and John Amato. The three of them together run the Blue America PAC. It's their baby. So we'll get a little bit of an election postscript from Digby, as well as everything else we're going to talk about. Mostly about Trump losing his mind today. That's what Digby's latest at Salon.com is about. Of course, she also writes about it at her Hullabaloo blog. So let's get going on the news, shall we? Because there's a lot going on. So with no further ado, we'll do it live.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So although the Dems scored another win in the House today, I told you, Jared Golden in Maine, Florida is still in recount hell.
Broward and Palm Beach counties really have been the two counties that have been plagued with most of the controversy. And one day before deadline is no exception. In Palm Beach County, overheated, old, malfunctioning machines are now causing them to recount the recount. You heard that right. They lost one day's worth of work, 179,000 ballots counted. Now they're having to fly in technicians. Staff are working 24/7. Now the supervisor of elections there has never said that she's going to complete all three statewide recounts, only saying that she is going to finish the Senate race. Will she? It's unclear. We will definitely be looking out for that tomorrow. Now, we have seen a slew of lawsuits in this recount. You should know about at least one of them, filed by the Dems in Tallahassee. And here is what is being argued, that the state law that requires that the signature in a mail-in ballot matches the registered signature is unconstitutional.
Oh, so Florida's historic recount was thrown once more into uncertainty this morning when a federal judge ruled that thousands of voters whose mailed ballots were rejected because of issues with their signatures now have two additional days to resolve the problems and possibly have their votes counted. Nothing like bringing it right down to the wire or anything. So the judge's decision came just hours ahead of the deadline that was set for this afternoon for elections officials to complete a manual recount. It's particularly notable in the too-close-to-call Senate race in which Governor Voldemort, Rick Scott, leads Senator Bill Nelson by fewer than 13,000 votes. So this order extends the deadline to Saturday at 5 p.m. All right, so Donald Trump continues to prove he has no idea what he's talking about. He did an interview with the Daily Caller, and in it, he once again claimed that you need an ID to buy groceries. Quote, "If you buy a box of cereal, you have a voter ID. They try to shame everybody by calling them racist or calling them something, anything they can think of, when you say you want voter ID. But voter ID is a very important thing." God, even doing the sort of Trump voice, he's just insane. So Trump told the website Daily Caller, voter ID is essential, insisting that Republicans aren't winning because of, quote, potentially illegal votes. Telling you, the guy's off his meds. He then claimed with zero evidence that people, this is the best one of all, people have been changing clothes in order to vote multiple times. I want you to fully understand what he's saying. Here's a quote. "When people get in line that have absolutely no right to vote and they go around in circles, sometimes they go to their car, put on a different hat, put on a different shirt, come in and vote again." What? "Nobody takes anything," he continued. "It's really a disgrace what's going on. I'll tell you what's a disgrace, having some kind of an asshole in the White House who says shit like this. I don't know if he believes it or not, or he just gets off on lying to the American people. Either way, there's a problem there." In that same Daily Caller interview, Trump also called for Florida's Broward County election supervisor, Brenda Snipes, to be fired, which she should be, after the state's gubernatorial and Senate elections were sent to a recount. The president also suggested sinister motives behind vote counting issues in Broward County. Quote, When they call this woman incompetent, they're wrong. She's very competent, but in a bad way. No, she's just incompetent. And she should have been voted out of office. The thing is, she was appointed by Jeb Bush to replace, I think her name was Miriam Oliphant, who was the Broward supervisor of elections during the 2000 recount. And you know what a mess that was. So Jeb Bush puts Brenda Snipes in, and she's awful. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. She should not be in that office. In the last election, I guess she's run and gotten reelected three or four times since then. Somebody ran against her who was not good either. But I guess we need somebody qualified to run against her. Actually, we just need to replace her. In other news, Michael Avenatti, remember him? He was Stormy Daniels' attorney who was preparing to run for the Democratic presidential nomination. He has been arrested for alleged domestic violence. He denied the charges.
First of all, I want to thank the hardworking men and women of the LAPD for their professionalism and their work today. They had no option in light of the allegations. Secondly, I have never struck a woman. I never will strike a woman. I have been an advocate for women's rights my entire career, and I'm going to continue to be an advocate. I am not going to be intimidated from stopping what I am doing. I am a father to two beautiful, smart daughters. I would never disrespect them by touching a woman inappropriately or striking a woman. I am looking forward to a full investigation, at which point I am confident that I will be fully exonerated. I also want to thank everyone for their support that has reached out. You know my character. You know me as a man, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's Michael Avenatti, who says he's innocent, and I guess everyone's innocent until proven guilty. But maybe this will stop him from his ridiculous presidential run. Sorry, you may be a good lawyer. Doesn't mean you should be president. Just my opinion. A new report from NBC says that the Trump administration officials asked federal law enforcement agencies to examine legal ways of removing exiled Turkish cleric Fethullah Gulen from the U.S. in an attempt. Okay, I'm reading this, but do you understand the story? The Trump administration is trying to examine legal ways of removing that exiled Turkish cleric. His name is Fethullah Gulen. In an attempt to persuade the Turkish President Erdogan to ease pressure on the Saudi government over the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Again, let that sink in. Turkey, other nations have all condemned the murder of Khashoggi. The United States wants to cover it up and let Saudi Arabia off the hook. And they want to pressure Erdogan to ease the pressure on the Saudi government about this murder. So they're looking at ways to exile a guy who is here legally, this exiled Turkish cleric. It's just one thing after another with this guy. So you heard a few days ago, we told you that CNN filed a lawsuit over the revocation of Jim Acosta's press pass. Well, the Justice Department responded, saying in a court filing that the White House rejects the idea that it can't pick and choose which journalists can be given a permanent pass to cover it.
The administration's filed a response in court ahead of this 3:30 p.m. hearing. CNN's asking, of course, for a temporary restraining order to get Acosta's press pass back right away. But the White House is saying that President Trump has, quote, broad discretion to decide who gets in and who gets out of the White House. In other words, the president's saying he gets to choose. He gets to limit who's at the White House, which reporters are able to attend presidential events. It's a lengthy brief that's been filed with the court. But it says that the broad discretion is the key point, mm-hmm. that the president has broad discretion here. That flies in the face, and by the way, it says the White House as well, have the same broad discretion to regulate access to the White House for journalists and other members of the public that other past administrations have. So that is the claim here from the president's lawyers defending the move to revoke Acosta's press credentials. The reason why this is going to be interesting this afternoon is because because Secret Service regulations, the Code of Federal Regulations, mm-hmm. says something different. The regulations are pretty clear that unless you're a threat to the president's life, press passes are not going to be revoked. So this is going to be the legal battle that unfolds later today.
Oh, yeah. So that was yesterday. The judge heard arguments yesterday afternoon and said he'd rule on the matter Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. So we should have had the answer, right? Not so fast. By early this afternoon, the judge again moved his deadline, this time until 10 a.m. tomorrow. By the way, Trump appointed this judge, Timothy J. Kelly, in case you're keeping score. Maybe that's why he just keeps putting off the decision. Retiring Republican Senator Jeff Flake said yesterday, this is interesting, that he will not vote to confirm the Trump administration's judicial nominees on the Senate floor or advance them in the Senate Judiciary Committee if legislation to protect Special Counsel Robert Mueller doesn't receive a Senate floor vote. Flake made this new judicial threat after he and Democratic Senator Chris Coons unsuccessfully attempted to force a Senate vote on the special counsel legislation yesterday. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell objected to the request for a vote from Flake. Of course he did. But Flake's threats on judicial nominees could complicate matters in the Judiciary Committee, where Republicans have an 11-10 majority. And Flake is on that committee, so he's the 11th vote, right? There are currently 21 judicial nominees pending in the committee and 32 who are awaiting a floor vote. Flake said, "We've been told that the bill that Senator Coons and I will move to bring up shortly is not necessary, as there have been no indications that the independence of Mr. Mueller's investigation is in jeopardy." That may have been an arguable position before last week, he said, but it's not arguable anymore. And I agree. Speedbird9 in the chat room says, talk is cheap, Jeff. It is. We'll see if he follows through this time, because he's made empty threats before, and then winds up voting with Trump. And finally, Oxford Dictionaries has chosen the word toxic as its International Word of the Year, selecting it from a shortlist that included such politically inflected contenders as gaslighting, incel, and techlash. Explaining their choice, the Oxford University Press said toxic became an intoxicating descriptor for the year's most talked about topics. I'd say the whole year was toxic. It really was. The toxicity is just starting to break a little bit with the knowledge that the House will be under Democratic control beginning in January. I just wish we could get rid of the rest of the toxicity sitting in the White House. All right, that's a bit of news for now. Coming up in a few minutes, Heather Digby Parton will be here. So stick around. First, let's hear the latest from Brad and Desi in the Green News Report.
It's Thursday, November 14, 2018.
Home after home, neighborhood after neighborhood, completely destroyed.
The death toll continues to rise as California wildfires rage on.
We have a real challenge here. Threatening our whole way of life.
While state officials grapple with preparing for tomorrow's disasters. Climate change may impact male fertility, new study shows. Plus,
we kind of just got to roll up our sleeves and do it ourselves. And if we want to make this change, we have to do it.
New Democrats push old guard to take bold action on climate change.
All of that bold action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And at a time like this, it is hard to know the right thing to say. But for the wrong thing to say, let's check the president's Twitter feed.
Let's not. You're welcome. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm sorry to say we have to start with more grim news coming out of California out here.
Yes, those three devastating wildfires in both Northern and Southern California. As of airtime, the fires have killed nearly 60 people statewide, with at least 80 still listed as unaccounted for. The historic Camp Fire in Northern California is now the nation's deadliest wildfire in over 100 years. Victims have filed the first lawsuit of what is likely to be many against electric utility Pacific Gas and Electric, alleging negligence by PG&E in maintaining their overhead power lines. The state's seasonal rains have still not materialized, and no rain is in the forecast through at least Thanksgiving.
Do we know now, in fact, that it was the PG&E power lines that sparked these fires?
Not yet. An investigation is underway. it does seem likely. Repeated devastating wildfires over the last few years have pushed California officials to begin the monumental task of adapting the state's infrastructure, emergency response, and its insurance sector to grapple with more frequent extreme weather disasters caused and made worse by man-made global warming and the resulting public health emergencies and the long-term economic costs of recovery. In an interview with CBS News, fire consultant and former Sacramento Fire Chief Kurt Henke said those meetings began a few months ago.
We are working, of course, together with both the insurance industry, the utilities industry, all stakeholder groups to try to figure out how to address these new dramatic climate-driven events that are going to be the new norm that we're going to be dealing with for the next 50 to 100 years.
In my humble opinion, it is a conversation that folks in every state should be demanding from their elected officials. Meanwhile, global warming may reduce male fertility, cutting sperm counts in half due to higher temperatures, at least for beetles. A UK study found that in the lab, simulated heat waves damaged the sperm of insects. Repeated heat waves made them nearly sterile, and the damage could be passed down to the beetle's offspring.
Well, thankfully it's only beetles.
Well, a different study found that male sperm counts are declining and climate change may be to blame.
Oh.
And a different study on top of that recently found that populations of flying insects have declined by more than 75%. Over the last 30 years in Germany, but the researchers say more study is needed to determine if global warming is a factor there. In other news, a high-ranking Trump Environmental Protection Agency official has been indicted in Alabama on charges related to his previous job as a consultant. EPA Region 4 Director Trey Glenn, a Trump appointee, was indicted this week on state corruption charges for working to prevent a severely polluted Birmingham neighborhood from being added to the federal Superfund list because it would have forced the industries responsible for the pollution, his clients, to help pay for the cleanup.
Has this wildly corrupt EPA official resigned?
Not yet.
Of course not.
And in Washington, Democratic Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York joined dozens of climate activists with the Sunrise Movement at a sit-in at the office of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Tuesday. The protest was in support of forming a congressional select committee for a Green New Deal to begin the process of crafting concrete, evidence-based climate action legislation that is equal to what scientists say is necessary. Ocasio-Cortez responded to critics of the Pelosi protest, saying it's intended to bolster Democrats' ambition to act on climate change.
This is an encouragement of her, and this is to show that we're here to back up bold action and that she will be supported in that.
I think Nancy Pelosi can use all the support she can find right now. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'll be there for you.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right. Before we get Digby on the line, just a little reminder, you know, the holidays are coming up. So if you do shop at Amazon, please use the Nicole Sandler Show portal. You can get to it from NicoleSandler.com. And just use that as a way to get into Amazon. And it doesn't look any different. It doesn't cost anything different. But I get a small commission off of anything you buy if you enter through my page. So you can even bookmark it and just use that to go to Amazon. Another lovely gift idea, if you like books, I opened the Nicole Sandler Show bookstore The link is at NicoleSandler.com. It's a bunch of books whose authors I've either interviewed or decided not to interview, but books that have been sent to me nonetheless. In fact, yesterday's book by Elizabeth Holtzman, The Case for Impeaching Trump, has been added to the bookstore. And a bunch of other ones. So stroll. Take a little look at what's there, see if there's anything you want. And while you're there, another great gift idea, while I have a moment, comes from our friends at Film Fix out in California. They, they take your old movies, home movies, and videotapes, and convert them to digital media or however you want them. That's a great gift to give to your family, digitizing all of your old home movies and stuff. The link to Film Fix is on the bottom of the Amazon portal page. I'm also going to put it in the bookstore at NicoleSandler.com to make it easy to find. And they're listeners of the show, and they'll give you, give me a little kickback too if you go use them through that portal as well. Okay? All right. Let's not wait any longer. Let's get Digby on the line. We got to call her there, and let's play this.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
And joining us on the line is Digby, Heather Digby Parton. You can find her at digbysblog.blogspot.com or at salon.com or on Twitter at Digby56. Hey, Digby, how are you doing out there?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I worry about all my friends in California and my home. I still consider California my home, even though I haven't been there in a number of years. I know you're safe from the fires where you are, right?
I am. I'm in Santa Monica, right. But we have... we're close to Malibu, which is where one of the big fires are. And so, we've definitely had some air quality serious issues, just like they do up in the Bay Area. So, and I know a bunch of people who've been evacuated. Luckily, nobody I personally know has been, had their house destroyed, mm-hmm. although a ton of people have.
Yeah.
But I have been, I sort of work, do volunteer work for animal rescue, and it's just... heartbreaking.
Oh, I'll bet. I've seen some pictures and videos of horses being taken out of there.
Oh. Yeah, and it's, all the wild animals and then mm-hmm. a lot of pets that they couldn't gather up before they left. They're missing. And the place where I do volunteer work, they've taken in a bunch of cats that just sort of turned up and nobody knew who they belonged to. I mean, it's an awful, awful situation. And can I just say how horrifying and disgusting it is to me that our president's first reaction in the middle of the death and destruction uh-huh. was to blame California to blame the victim and threaten to withhold money. I mean, somebody talked him into retreating on that, mainly, I think, because the firefighters in California went nuts.
I mean,
they really were upset. And I think probably law enforcement was, too, because they're involved in all this stuff. But it just shows what a pig he is. I mean, the fact that he would do that in the midst, as it was happening and dead bodies were turning up, it just says everything about him. I mean, nothing is clearer than that.
I know.
Anybody who isn't his fan, any place that doesn't worship him, he's fine with, basically them dying, apparently.
Yeah. I would say it's unbelievable, but it's really not. That is par for the course from this guy who is so mentally stunted. He's like a 10-year-old. I swear he is not past the mental maturity level of a 10-year-old.
Absolutely. And kind of a malevolent, bullying, creepy 10-year-old, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see any of the good side of most 10-year-olds. It's probably unfair to 10-year-olds to compare him. I mean, there's something wrong with him. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the guy's not normal.
Nope.
And even by, normal 10-year-old standards, there's something wrong with him. And, he does this over and over again. And, in fact, I mean, at the time, I can't remember who wrote this up, but one of the political, online, I think it was Axios, actually,
uh-huh.
that he was at the same time, he's not going to approve more funding for Puerto Rico in their recovery from Hurricane Maria. And the reason is, and this is the part that just drives you nuts, right? Because it's not just that he's malevolent and cruel. It's that he's just almost, he's an unbearable ignoramus.
Yes.
He read an article in the Wall Street Journal that he misinterpreted as saying that Puerto Rico was using recovery funds to pay off its debt.
Right.
First of all, I don't give a damn about that.
Uh-huh.
Use it for whatever you need to use it for, as long as you are, you know, using the funds, as long as the people are benefiting, you know, whatever. But that's not what the article said, but that's what he thinks it said. People have tried to tell him that he's got it wrong, but he doesn't care. And so he's now saying that he's going to refuse to sign the latest bill that they expect to try and pass through Congress appropriations, which will include money for wildfires and for the hurricane and for Puerto Rico. And he's claiming that he's going to refuse to sign it if it has more funding for Puerto Rico. I mean, he goes out of his way. I mean, we know why, right? I mean, he hates them, not just because he's a racist. That's part of it.
That is.
But also because he feels that they haven't been sufficiently respectful of him, that they haven't bowed down to him the way he expects. Same thing with California. And so he's saying, you know, well, this is my money, I sign the checks, and you're not going to get one until you come crawling to me. And it's banana, it's worse than Banana Republic. He's like some, you know, real low-rent mob boss. That's the model of leadership for him. You know,
and he's gone off. I mean, I was going to say he's gone off the rails. He's never been on the rails, but
right.
But he's melting down. I mean, today on Twitter, even the nonsense he was tweeting out about or saying, he said in the interview with the Daily Caller yesterday that people are in Florida. Hello, are going they're online to vote. They don't have any right to vote anyway, but they go in and they vote. Then they go back out to their cars and they put on a hat and change their shirt and go in and vote again.
You know, I have to wonder where he got that. That's one that, you know, normally you can sort of trace what he says
right, to Fox.
To Fox News.
Sure.
You know, what if it's on Fox, he just sort of parrots it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not even sure Fox has gone that far to say that they're putting on hats and changing in their car and coming in. I mean, that seems like something he just thought up all by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, I mean, do you think Fox is actually, I don't know.
I don't think they
that
do.
Seems even far-fetched for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, of course, they're saying they're cheating and they're letting illegal immigrants vote and all the usual crapola. But something that specific that they've seen people, and now, number one, of course, it's nonsensical because, needless to say, you can't just go out, vote, and then come in and vote again under a different
name. I don't think
name.
So.
I mean, It's ridiculous. And again, you know, we're back to the 10-year-old, right?
Yes.
That's something a child would come up with. That no normal adult would think that.
Right. And he also said in that same interview something he had said before and had been corrected on. He thinks you need an ID to buy groceries. And people, you know, told him that's not the case last time, but he said it again. If you buy a box of cereal, you have voter ID. What the fuck is he talking about?
I don't know. I mean, that one really gets me. I mean, number one, it shows how out of touch he is. Here's the blue-collar hero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just obviously, he's so clueless. Has he been in a grocery store, I don't know, ever?
Right.
I mean, I
probably
don't even know
not.
If he ever, he's was born rich, so, you know, maybe he's never gone shopping in his life. But the fact that, you know, of course people brought it to his attention. Of course people said something. You know, he spends all his time watching TV.
Yep.
And you know he watches CNN just as much as he watches Fox. Honestly,
yes.
He
yep.
does, because he knows everybody who's on there.
That's right.
So, you know, he heard it. He knew it. He just, either he's got memory problems, which is possible, and he just doesn't, you know, is unable to retain information. We know that much. That he cannot learn anything. So maybe that's it. You know, he just doesn't have the capacity. Or he just stubbornly clings to whatever, you know, thing he came up with. But, I mean, that interview with the Daily Caller, I put up the whole transcript on my blog today because I found it really astonishing. Because, like you say, he is melting down. Something has happened to him that he's worse than usual, and that is really saying something. That the pressure is getting to him, and we can speculate about why that is, and probably should speculate about why that is. But that Daily Caller interview really exposed it, and a couple of things that I found really horrifying. One of which, first of all, he admitted that he put in this guy Whitaker to replace Jeff Sessions to interfere with the Mueller probe.
Sure.
In the same way, he admitted that he fired James Comey. It's kind of, he can't help himself.
Right.
It just kind of slips out.
Right. He told Lester
part
Holt.
Part of his stream of consciousness.
Right. Of course. Yeah, just like he told Lester Holt in that interview, and then he tried to backtrack on it because he realizes, oh my God, I told the truth.
Right.
Yeah.
But he can't help it. Right. It's like that comes out of his mouth because it's just, it's almost as if he's self-sabotaging himself. But if that's considered, that's more evidence for obstruction of justice. I mean, if he hasn't learned that by now, he never will.
Mm-hmm.
And then even more frightening to me, I mean, that's an authoritarian move right there.
Yes.
But then even more frightening, he goes into this thing about how the cops are getting angry at Antifa, and they're getting angrier and angrier, and Antifa better watch it because there's going to be violence. I mean, basically, he's threatening to use the police as sort of, as his own personal, brown shirts,
well,
or as I call them, red hats.
Yes.
But
didn't he sort of do that at the border by sending the military down there
for the
caravan? Oh my God, the caravan's coming.
Exactly. I mean, but this is, this people like to sort of dismiss his authoritarian shtick as being just something he says to the folks.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't really, I think that's a big mistake. First of all, it's a mistake to ever dismiss authoritarian, rhetoric by the most powerful man in the world. I mean, I'm sorry, but you're a fool if you just sort of dismiss that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because he does have power, and he also has a lot of backing among that particular part of our society. I mean, there are a lot of police, certainly the Border Patrol and ICE love him.
Ugh.
He's still got a lot of power, a lot of approval among the military, not as much as he did, which is kind of interesting, but that's mostly among the women in the military and the officer corps, sort of paralleling what's going on in the country, generally speaking, the more educated people, minorities and women in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like him, but the white enlisted guys all really think he's great. But, he has a lot of backing among the uniformed members of our society. Let's just put it that way. That's very scary.
Yes.
For him to just sort of say, you better watch it because these guys are getting angry and they're going to do something about it. I mean, I don't know who he thinks Antifa is, but I got a feeling he thinks Antifa is anybody who protests him, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Oh, I do. I definitely believe that. He's got such a warped sense of reality that it's really frightening that he's the guy with the nuclear codes. I mean, this latest news story, I just read it. I don't know if you heard this, that he's looking for NBC is reporting that the administration is looking for legal ways of removing the exiled Turkish cleric from the U.S. to appease the Saudis, so to persuade Erdogan to ease pressure on the Saudi government over the murder of Khashoggi.
It's horrifying. And remember that this was one of the things that Mike Flynn was involved
in. That's right.
Back, and I think it's part of the Mueller investigation.
It's gotta
be. This thing with extraditing this guy, Gulen, who is he's some kind of a dissident, a Turkish dissident,
right?
And a big enemy of Erdogan, the prime minister. This whole thing with Khashoggi is very, very interesting. I mean, obviously, we don't know everything yet, and the story, they just keep changing the story over and over again, but the idea that that the United States is doing that, and why, right? I mean, this is has everything, well, it has to do with money,
of course,
and Trump's personal money. I don't think we need to doubt that. It has to do with oil prices,
yep.
And it has to do with war with Iran,
mm-hmm.
And which is what, John Bolton, that's his mission in there, is to get his war on. I mean, that's what he's been he's wanted to do for
yep.
years.
That's right.
So, you know, this is all very scary, the fact that, you know, all these players are playing. My only hope is that somehow or another, you know, Erdogan, who is hardly the guy you want to put your money on, he's
right.
an authoritarian jackass too.
That's right.
But somehow or another, he seems to be sort of the guy in the middle between Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. I guess I've got to kind of hope that somehow or another he's more sophisticated and able to kind of keep control of this thing than any of the rest of them, because MBS, the you know, the Prince bin Salman
in Saudi Arabia,
he's as nuts as Trump is.
Yeah.
And who knows what the Iranians are going to do. I mean, the whole thing is just crazy
and
scary.
The inmates running the asylum, like literally.
Nope.
It's nuts. Digby is with us, the wonderful Heather Digby Parton. So Howie Klein is usually on with us at this time, and he's taking a little vacation after the elections. You guys worked hard, and I constantly tell the listeners, but in case they don't know, you, Digby, run the Blue America PAC along with Howie Klein and John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Congratulations! One of your endorsed candidates was just announced the winner in Maine today of the House seat, Maine 2nd District. Jared Golden. So how did the Blue America candidates do overall?
Oh, they did very well. In fact, we are going to have one probably announced within the next couple of days in California, Katie Porter in California against who looks to be winning against Mimi Walters, which is a really great victory for progressives, because Mimi Walters is one of the worst right-wing politicians in California, and she went all in with Trump. And Katie Porter is a super progressive, an acolyte of Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, great.
And she's super smart, and she ran her race so intelligently. And this is Orange County, and let me tell you know, Orange County is no longer, obviously, Reagan country, no longer Trump country, but it's still not, you know, you would not think of her district as being particularly welcoming to that message. But everyone should look at her race and check out how she did it and see what it takes in those kinds of, you know, conservative, and I'm talking about red leaning, you know, districts. They
right.
really are not, they're not the, you know, that's sort of filled with all these white college educated, you know, people, although Orange County,
yes,
her district does have those people. But you know what I mean, how a smart progressive can do it. She's a wonderful candidate. I couldn't be happier. And of course, you know, across the board, I mean, we lost some too, of course,
mm-hmm.
people that we, as we all did, you know,
yep.
we were backing Gillum and Beto and Stacey Abrams and, you know, and Iron Stash up in Michigan,
and
you know, I
Wisconsin.
Mean, those, we had yep. some heartbreakers, but
yes.
that's the way it works. And, you know, I just have to say this because I think it's important for people to, as they're all sorting out the results of the election and going, well, did the progressives blow it or did the centrists blow it or what messages worked or whatever. You know, Blue America, and I can't speak for any other progressive group, and maybe Blue America's alone in this, but we've never done this because we were trying to notch up big wins alone. We never, you know, when Howie does the vetting of these candidates, and he does not look at them as saying, well, you know, can you raise the money?
Right.
Can you, you know, will you, you know, he has an issue matrix that he uses to vet candidates. And he talks to them and decides whether or not we want to help them. And by helping them, it's not because we think necessarily, you know, oh, my gosh, is it worth it? Are they going to win? That's not part of Blue America's,
mm-hmm.
You know,
process,
set of criteria.
Right.
What Blue America wants is to build progressivism throughout the country. So we often back candidates in places where it's really, really hard. But by giving them a little money, giving them a little advice, giving them a little bit of support in whatever way we can, we are trying to build this sort of, you know, and it's, I don't really even want to call it a movement because we really concentrate on House elections
mm-hmm.
and some Senate races, but that's really, our focus is on that, is what we're trying to do is to create more people who understand progressive politics and are kind of working for it, whether they're working on the local, state, or federal level, we figured helping these people and helping giving them some support, even if it's just moral support, is worth doing. And, you know, we've been doing it since 2006.
Yep.
And I say we, but really, I mean, you know, this is Howie's thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so, you know, he's just so immersed in this. I mean, I'm basically an adjunct, as is John. I mean, we do what we can, but he's the guy who does all the heavy lifting on this thing. But in the end, what we're trying to do is just sort of create, you know, help progressivism as a sort of philosophy. As we see it. And so it's never really a loss for us, even when people that we believe in and really think are terrific, if they lose a heartbreaker of a race, you know, like Randy Bryce, somebody like that, you know, what was built there in that district, what happened there with him and with the people who were working with him and all the volunteers, that seeds the future.
Sure.
And we started in 2006. It's 2018, and, you know, I'm not going to say that Blue America takes credit for it, but all the work that progressive groups like us do, I think we're seeing a lot of results of that. This takes time, you know. It's not something that happens overnight.
Right.
And every cycle, there have been more and more progressives. Every election, you know, produces more people for the next time. And, you know, we have a big progressive caucus in there. A lot of great people won that are going to be the leaders of tomorrow. So, you know, I feel like that I feel for the first time in a long time. I mean, we were sort of taken off track, I think, during the Obama years because we had a very strong, you know, a charismatic leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people sort of lost sight of the kind of grassroots organizing that needed to be done, and we fell behind. But for the first time, I'm kind of going, wow, it's working, you know? I mean, it's been 12 years, and it's working. We're seeing this change and building this new generation of leadership. I mean, I feel pretty good about it. And even just on the, you know, as a Democrat in general, you know, with a D after my name,
right.
I couldn't be happier that, thank God, we took one House of Congress
kidding.
To try
no
and put
kidding.
A stopgap on this monster.
That's right. So speaking of the House, where do you fall in the Nancy Pelosi question? Should she be the Speaker?
I feel that Nancy Pelosi should remain Speaker because I think that she has the experience and the know-how to do this particular job that has to be done over the next 2 years. It's going to be super tumultuous, very, very difficult, lots and lots of challenges. The Democrats are going to be managing a very, very contentious presidential campaign that's going to be taking up a lot of oxygen.
Yep.
Trump is losing his mind, and God only knows what he's going to do, and he's also going to be running. And we have all these investigations which have to be done. The oversight must be done. It's their constitutional duty, and they're the only place that's going to be doing it. And they have to be able to put forth some kind of positive agenda that is going to be something that these people can run on in 2 years and that the president, whoever that is, can also have as a platform going into 2020. It's a huge undertaking, and I don't think there's anybody prepared to do it except for Pelosi. Having said that, Pelosi, what I'm hoping that people are doing with her in this negotiation that's going on, is basically setting up the next generation, which she will agree in advance to turn over in 2020 to the next person, prepared, knowing what they're doing. They can sit there for the next 2 years and watch her, learn from her, and be prepared to step up a group of them. You know, who knows who it's going to be? I don't know. But, you know, obviously, she cannot do this forever. And, you know, and I know that people blame her for not preparing the leadership, but I do want to remind people, she had been bringing a bunch of people up, many of whom left, lost, or, you know, went on to, attempted to go to higher office, people like Donna Edwards and Chris Van Hollen, a younger generation. So she's kind of been stuck. I mean, I'm not saying she couldn't have tried harder or that she shouldn't have been working at it more. Maybe she's clinging to power, whatever. But, you know, it's not all that obvious to me that she totally neglected her duty on that. I think she was trying, and it just kind of didn't work out. But now it's push come to shove. She's getting too old. She's going to have to, you know, she should retire from the Congress soon, actually.
I mean,
leave that seat open, give her seat to somebody else. It's San Francisco.
That's
know,
right.
It would be a good progressive. So that's my stance on it. And I think I'm hopeful that as this whole, you know, battle comes out, I'm very skeptical of these people who are pushing so hard. People like Seth Moulton,
yep,
and this group of what they're calling hashtag five white guys. These are conservative Democrats. These are not progressives. They're not
right.
The kind of people who are going to be pushing for the kind of things that you and I want, Nicole. They are the kind of people who are going to be accommodating Donald Trump. And, you know, those are the last, you know, if she's going to get pushed out, being pushed out by those guys is the worst of all possible outcomes.
Yeah.
And we've been here before, right? I mean, the Blue Dogs did this for years.
Yep.
They sabotaged Democrats, and we got rid of them. Now, in order to build our bigger coalition, there's a few more of them out there again. And we're going to have to be prepared for this. These guys are not going to let up. They believe they, just like the Freedom Caucus in the Republican Party, we have our own Freedom Caucus. And they're right-wingers, too. It's not like our, you know, everybody said, well, you know, the Democrats are going to have their own problem with the Freedom Caucus. They were talking about the progressives. No. It's not the progressives
mm-hmm.
who are the Freedom Caucus. It's the same right-wing, you know, they're not as right-wing as the Freedom Caucus, but, you know, for our purposes, they are.
It's the new
and
Dems
they
now.
Are,
right.
Yeah, so that's, you know, let's look at who those people are. They're trying to, you know, they're willing to destroy all of us, just like the Freedom Caucus is,
mm-hmm.
who have no, they don't care for their party, they don't care for their country, they don't care for their houses of Congress. They don't care about anything but their own ability to wield power, and that's what we're seeing in our right-wing caucus. And so I really, you know, we have a lot more progressives and a lot more power on the other end than the Republicans do. So there's
right.
no reason
well,
for us to succumb to that.
Right. The progressive caucus should grow by at least a dozen or so, I would think, after this election. And hopefully, I mean, it is, I think it's the largest caucus in the House.
It is.
And it's amazing how they've been kind of toothless. I mean, every year the Progressive Caucus puts out a great budget, the people's budget, and nobody ever pays any attention to it.
I know.
I would love to see them get some notice and have somebody in leadership who could, you know, give it a little bit of juice.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that sort of tells you something, too, about, you know, what we have. You know, the progressives haven't been grooming leadership either
mm-hmm.
any more than Pelosi
right.
has.
And
you know, she's a progressive. I mean, I don't think she's not, you know, people.
She used to be more progressive than she seems to be now. But
well, I think it's just that the party has gone more progressive.
Uh-huh.
I think she's where she always
huh.
was, but,
oh,
you know, it's gone to her left. But
uh-huh.
regardless of that, she's not a right winger and
no.
she's not a conservative. I mean, she's sort of a mainstream Democrat. And, you know, I do think that the progressives, you know, I mean, it is the biggest, and has been for a long time, by the way, not
yep.
just after this election. It's big. But they haven't really been particularly effective. And they put out, you know, good policies and they do this, but they don't exercise their power as a bloc
right.
effectively in the caucus. So, but you know what? I see some new leadership here. I mean, you know, if you look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
She was amazing. Just her first day on Capitol Hill, she was
yeah.
amazing.
Absolutely. And by the way, I think that she and Pelosi did, you know, I liked what I saw
uh-huh.
in the way that worked.
Right. She was criticized. She was criticized by some for, you know, what, protesting Nancy Pelosi on her first day there. No, she was working with Nancy Pelosi.
Absolutely. And you know, even if she wasn't, Nicole, the fact is that both of those women are smart.
Yep.
And they know exactly how to leverage their power in ways that they can work together. And that is a very positive you know, a positive development. So maybe
definitely.
The progressives are going to have some new leadership. She needs some seasoning, of course,
yep.
Alexandria. She's not even in the Congress
right,
yet.
Right.
But obviously, I think that, you know, and it's not just her. There are other, like I said, Katie Porter is
mm-hmm.
another one. There's a whole bunch of them that are coming in, and I think they're going to be great. And so maybe, you know, within the next few years, we're going to see a different Democratic House caucus. You know, I really feel like it's working.
Yes,
I guess that's what
and
it's working.
And in 2020, that the map changes on the Senate side as well, when a lot more
yeah.
vulnerable Republicans come up. This time, it was all vulnerable Democrats in red states. So it was not a good map for the Democrats. That'll change next time, and hopefully, you know, I'm being fantastical here, but maybe we can, you know, take back the Senate and the White House as well. That's got to be the goal.
You know what, Nicole, we have to.
Yes, I know.
We have to do it. We have got to stop this. I mean, the Democrats have got to save the country. They just have to. This madman has got to be taken out of the White House. He's got to be, you know, he's got to be defeated.
Yes.
And we can't do anything without the Senate. It's going to be a huge lift to reverse all this stuff.
No kidding. Hey, Digby, we're out of time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care. Bye, everyone.